Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to 2012, Weekend Confirmers.
Hey.
Hey.
Last year went to 11.
This year.
It's the dirty dozen.
It's the dirty dozen.
There you go.
Name.
Well, that's not good.
I'm going to have a hard time not calling this year the dirty dozen. I'm going to tell you that. Next year, Baker's dozen.
Right on.
I have this whole plan. I have a two-year plan, guys.
So I'm Garnet Lee. It's going to be an awesome year. Glad you are here to kick it off with us on episode 94. We're only six episodes away from 100.
Are we doing something special?
We're going to hit the century mark.
Are we celebrating in some way?
We have to celebrate somehow. We have to celebrate
somehow.
You mean
drinking.
I probably mean drinking, but we'll do some other stuff. I don't know what it'll be. We'll have cake and party favors.
I hope the cake is not a lie.
The cake is not a lie.
All right.
That's Jeff Cannata to my left.
Hey, welcome to 2012, everybody.
You're just going to insist on continuing to honor that troll's request.
No. I can say that's at Jeff Cannata with two N's and one T.
All right, whatever. Anyway, fine, be that way. You've lost it. It's no longer yours.
All right.
You've given it up. And Mr. Zav D'Amatos at the other end.
It's with one X and no Z. Am I allowed to say it? No one's bitching to me about it yet. Happy New Year, everyone.
You can say whatever you want.
You know
I
what,
say
though?
Whatever the hell I want.
Because you said that, we brought somebody in who has a Z.
That's right.
Shit. Mind blown.
I got a real Z in my name.
That's right. That is Mr. Zach Hanks, who joins us as a special guest today in the fourth chair.
Welcome.
And
yeah,
applause. Thank you. I live on that. I live for that.
You should go by the official page because we're going to include Zach's IMDb link. Because
bring a sandwich when you're reading it, though.
Yeah, it's seriously.
Yeah, it's a day hike.
If you played
you guys are very kind.
In the last week, you probably played something that he was in. So he does voice acting, very prolific voice actor for video games. And a little bit later on, he's also a gamer. So we're talking about games as well. It's not like he's just randomly here. Like he's like, oh, I'm gonna play games as well. I wanted to be on the show. But we'll also talk some about doing voiceover work, something that Jeff and I dabbled in last year as well.
Yes, indeed.
And I would say dabble is probably about the right way to put it. Anything?
Hey, can we do this inside the actor's studio? Can I be like, can I speak to Marine number 7, please?
We have a few questions that were written by Bernard Pivot.
Do I get to talk about my favorite swear word and my favorite sound is?
Yeah, you can do it. What is your favorite sound?
My favorite sound?
Mm-hmm.
The human female voice in the throes of erotic pleasure.
A sound that all of our listeners are very familiar
ding,
with.
Ding, 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 ding.
From the glow of their computer monitor.
But no,
I hope I didn't make anyone just change the channel to
no, not at all. Not at all.
So just throw down a few of your favorite games that you've worked on, just to give the people some context.
Without a doubt, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Who would they recognize from that?
That is sort of my claim to fame role. That was one of the first roles I did when I started pursuing voice acting full time, and I played Captain McMillan in the what was the mission called? All Gillied Up. He's the Scottish sniper. He's the Scottish sniper captain that leads you through the mission.
Oh, you know him now. Now you
now
know
you
him,
know, right,
audience?
Yeah. Oh, I just got a thumbs up from the control room. Hi. Yes.
What's this Call of Duty thing? Is this like an indie game? I'm not familiar with?
That's right. It's a game no one's heard of.
And I've been playing Sweater like crazy. You're in that as well. I saw him from your.
I don't even know what Sweater is.
Sorry,
Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Oh,
he's trying
yes,
to start
I'm in
something.
Yes, okay,
I didn't
that.
Start it. Okay. I'm just perpetuating.
Yeah,
Sweater. There you go. Okay. All right. Yeah, I follow now. I play about 10 different just random mission granting characters in Star Wars: The Old Republic.
That was
a fun one to do too.
I am so curious about the process for that game because voiceover is such a huge component to it. I know we're going to talk about this later, but
you can get into as much as you want now.
Because I mean,
I just
how
want
much
a break.
Are you guys in those? You know, you're actually playing scenes, right?
Yeah.
And scenes that can go in multiple different directions. Whereas I think I would assume a lot of the stuff that you've done in these other games, it's much more linear, right? In the sense that it's a it, it's a cutscene or something that it goes one direction rather than having branching story paths.
Yeah, video game dialogue comes in a lot of different sort of forms and formats. One of the most the kind that you're describing, where you've got these sort of branching scenes and branching story arcs. The stuff that we did for Star Wars The Old Republic, it's the same sort of style as for Mass Effect or for Dragon Age, where you go into a conversation, you've got several different options. So we've got to record every possible branch that you could take in that conversation, or every possible choice you could make in that particular situation. And it's actually... once you've got a few video games under your belt, it's actually not hard at all. I mean, one of the things that a video game actor needs to bring to the table is the ability to shift on a dime. Mm-hmm. So
give you 9 cents change.
And there you go.
I feel like some actor lingo just passed between the two.
I want to know where
actor lingo we just invented.
I want to know where they got the ascots that they're all of a sudden wearing. I have no idea what's happening.
It is a little warm in here.
You always have to have one of those handy.
But do you have context of? I mean, are you given just a big block of text, or you have context of, okay, so the hero tells you this, and that's when you go this direction, or the hero tells you that, and you go a different direction, or are you without that, the benefit of knowing why you're saying what you're saying?
Okay, with the kind of dialogue that we're talking about for, like, The Old Republic, or for Dragon Age, or for Mass Effect, the answer is yes, you have context on the script. Mm-hmm. So you've got whatever you're... Essentially, it flows just like dialogue for a play or dialogue for a movie. You have your cue line, the hero says X, and then you respond with Y. And then when we shift to a new sort of branch... the director will let you know, okay, well, this is a new option. This time the hero says Z, and now you can reply with A. Mm-hmm. And you basically just kind of follow off your cue line, and then you ask the director or the developer, if they are on the line, what, you know, if there's any other relevant given circumstances that we need to take into account. Like you're on the back of a tank, so you've got to be yelling, or this is coming right out of an argument, so there needs to be like some heat to it. Now that's for a very sort of narrative-driven, dialogue-heavy kind of game. A lot of other kinds of games, like let's say the Call of Duty games, for instance, I'm usually recording one-shot lines. Mm-hmm. Grenade! Get down!
Yeah.
You know, artillery incoming! That sort of stuff. And in those situations, you'll usually have very minimal context. You know,
there's artillery incoming.
Well, the context is pretty obvious from the line, and there's really only a certain number of ways you can read the line. You know, artillery incoming.
I would love to play that version of the
again.
Game.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right. Another grenade, guys.
Yeah.
God,
it's the Goth Squadron.
The emo
artillery
kids.
Incoming. I'm Sigh. So over this war. and in those situations, you're just rattling off one-shot line after one-shot line, hundreds of them, page after page.
All this
after
battle
page.
Chatter, right? It's battle interesting chatter, that you're here, because Gary Oldman was just on Conan, and they talked about his role in Call of Duty, because he plays Reznov in Call of Duty. And he says that it's the loudest performance he's ever had to give.
Oh, yeah.
And you're in the booth for about 2 seconds screaming all these battle chatter lines, and you just have this big, huge headache. And the joke that he said, because... who's the guy who played Jack Bauer?
Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland said that when he did it, he hadn't yelled that much since he was married. That was the joke that he said. So I just like, does it ever get to a point where you're doing this for so much during a day that you just your head is ringing and you.
Well, first I want to say I think it's really sweet when celebrities try to do video game dialogue.
Oh,
no,
nice.
No, 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 I'm kidding, I'm kidding.
Nice. Oldman.
I'm a huge Oldman fan. I'm actually a Kiefer Sutherland fan all the way since the Lost Boys.
I imagine in this story, the only one who's not his fan is his ex-wife.
There you go. it can be pretty intense. It can be pretty brutal. You know, and
is doing one harder than the other? Like when if you have the option to go do dialogue trees like Star Wars versus, you know, doing Call of Duty, is one more difficult than the other to do?
Dialogue trees are way easier.
Yeah.
Because dialogue trees are usually going to be conversations. So it'll be you and I just talking like this. I could do this all day. It's easy.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have the benefit.
Especially when I'm talking about myself. And I can really do it all day.
Yeah, but you don't have the benefit of the actual other actor there, right? You don't have the benefit of hearing the inflection that the other actor used, or, you know, because sometimes I've found just playing games that you hear something and it sounds dissonant just because it doesn't line up correctly. And it's not the actor's fault.
It sounds like two people having the same conversation, but but it's not with each other,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. like someone will say a line, and then okay, you know what? I'm just repeating what you said, and then the next one just it's the right words,
right?
But the inflection is off in some way,
right? So you can tell that the other person didn't,
that they were recorded in different rooms,
yeah. And you see that a lot in games that just came out, like L.A. Noire has a lot of that, especially mm-hmm. when Cole's doing the interrogations. The question I have for you is a company like Naughty Dog, what they do in some of their games is they'll actually have the actors in mocap suits delivering the dialogue, and actually they're recording their movements, so they kind of get the performance capture.
Right.
Is that something that you as an actor who does this would maybe want to try as well? Do you think that would be able to, you'd give a better performance that way?
A lot of my colleagues do motion capture as well as voiceover. I would certainly be happy to do it, and I've auditioned for it. I just haven't booked anything. You know, I haven't had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Motion capture is definitely a very different bag from doing voiceover. And what I'm referring to specifically is the voice acting part of motion capture. Whether you're just saying the lines and some other voice actor is going to come in and then dub it over,
right.
Or if you're actually doing the voices in real time while you're doing the movement, and that performance is going to be the voice of the character as well. Mm-hmm. That's sometimes called VO cap.
Yeah.
And it's a different bag, because with voiceover, I come in, I've got my script, and I just read off the page.
Yeah.
My job is to make it sound like I'm not really reading, you know, like I'm in the moment. With VO capture or with mocap, when you've still got to do your lines, it's all going to be memorized. You know, there's no room for you to have a script in your
hand.
So you've got to perform it all live, which is a heck of a lot harder. And I'll tell you, working in voiceover for a few years has spoiled me. I actually I've come to the point where I resent memorizing lines. If someone cast me in a play, I'd be like, can't I just walk out there and have my script? I'll do it just as good, probably better. Come on.
I think there's only really two companies, developers, that do it the way that Naughty does. There's Naughty Dog, and I think Ninja Theory did it with Heavenly Sword. They did performance capture, VO stuff,
and,
I think.
And the one that you love that was really recent.
Minecraft.
What's that?
Enslaved.
Enslaved.
But that's the same company.
This is Ninja Theory.
That's what I just said. You said... that's why
Heavenly Sword and Enslaved. Oh, and the two games. I thought you meant another developer that used that methodology.
Yeah. Anywho, I would imagine that's a lot more expensive and more difficult and unwieldy for these... You know.
But I think it's funny that he said that, because I found the most difficult part, and granted, it's been a long time. Like, I am certainly not a trained thespian in any stretch of the word. Like, you know,
theater. Are you thespian curious?
Yes. Theater classes.
That's his favorite sound.
Theater classes and do not equate to some sort of ability to say that pro. But so the hardest part, though, when we were doing the part for Pixel Junk Side Scroller, was trying to at the same time read off of the script and have it be delivered as a character, mm-hmm. you know, as actually being a character, because you sort of, I mean, everyone's read a lot of books and you read novels, and a lot of times you're like thinking about what the character might be like, but you don't go all the way to that step of like, oh, I now I'm going to voice this character and then have the narrator let them know. But now I'm sitting here reading this. I'm like, wow, I have to be this mission control person, and Jeff has to be the guy in the spaceship. I think you did a really good job with that, by the way.
Well, thank you. I did get a degree in make-believe.
You did a degree in make-believe? Your degree in make-believe?
I got one of those, too.
Yeah.
I should have gotten a degree in make-believe.
It's done me a whole lot of good.
Yeah. We wait tables at the same restaurant.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, that's what a lot of people in LA do. Hey, you guys jumped the gun a lot, but that was really good conversation about that. What I want to do is I'm going to come back to Zach here after the next break and talk a little bit about then what it's like after you've been inside the game to then be playing games that you've been inside, because I think that's going to be pretty cool. I mean, I know that, you know, we played to the end of Side Scroller, and it was pretty
cool to hear yourself.
It was pretty cool to hear yourself. Yeah, it was, and I mean, imagine like that was just a little microcosm of what it'd be like on a much larger scale. I'll give you guys a little glimpse about the rest of the show. What we got coming up, we are going to talk a little bit later on at the end of the show about some of the things we think might happen in 2012. Since you guys were begging us to make silly predictions, I lined up some stuff for these guys to make silly predictions about, because that's always fun. We're gonna hit a couple of big news stories. I want to start off here in just a minute talking about the Vita, because you know it's out now in Japan, but it's getting a lot of flack from all points. So we're gonna talk a little bit about the Vita, and then we've got some games we've been playing. I actually played Mario 3D Land. You guys have played Sweater, so we have a lot of things to cover. Mm. I want to hop right into the Vita story now. Before we get into the Vita too far, I want to to preface this by saying that, as I noted on Twitter, I'm not interested in presiding over the capsizing of the Vita boat. I think it's ridiculous how quickly everyone seems to be rushing to the let's bury the Vita and make a big story out of it and get a bunch of hits for our site or our stories, because it's just out. It's one of these. It's a classic Japanese hardware launch where it came out in Japan with some of the titles we'll have in the West, but not all of them. It came out into a very depressed economy still in Japan, where money is very, you know, very tightly watched by a number of people, and gamers are watching where they spend their money, and against a Monster Hunter on a competing handheld platform. Mm-hmm. So it's up against a tough situation. Now, all of those things having been said, it's impossible to overlook, and I want to have a reasonable conversation about this as opposed to a hyperbolic conversation about it, that it opened at a very respectable 325,000 units sold for its opening week. And then second week dropped to 70,000 roughly, and the third week it's down to 40,000. It's being outsold by the old PSP.
That's the stat that's worrisome to me.
That's being outsold by the old PSP.
Perplexing. That it's being outsold by the PSP. Now, what's the price delta? What's the PSP go for now? I don't even know.
In Japan?
Yeah, or anywhere. I don't even know what the PSP is down to at this point. Do you?
You know what? We'll have to look that up during the break. I'll pull it up. As a matter of fact, you can pull it up here on our handy-dandy weekend-confirmed iPad while I continue on that. The price difference, though, I don't think is the hugest deal here, because if you're laying out – well, maybe it is.
I mean, I think that's
I would imagine. I would imagine it's probably on the order of about 10,000 about 10,000 yen, right? No, 100,000 yen.
Wow. No, 10,000. We're clearly
yen.
Talking
yes,
out of, 10,000.
I'd say it'd be
we
on
did
the,
a lot of
about 100 bucks.
This episode.
I'd say it's on the order of about 100 bucks, yeah. Which would be in keeping with what it'll be here, because keep in mind the two units here are going to be 249 for the or 250 for the Wi-Fi version and 300 for the 3G version.
Well, I mean, if there are games on the PSP that they're real excited, people are really excited to play, they can't just buy the new one.
Well, so that's one of them.
That's kind of a big deal,
That's one of the things I have down here. You know, I think that you have to really look at the software to get to the heart of this matter. And one of the big ones for me is how they missed the opportunity here to link back to all of that great PlayStation heritage that they could have had. Now, admittedly, they have the UMD format that is sort of like an iron anchor around their handheld strategy. And this idea that you're going to pay money even for the instituted the what do they call it? Where you can basically pay a nominal, what they call a nominal fee, but it's still like $9 to $13, roughly American, to get your UMD licensed.
That is not nominal.
Licensed, so that you can then play a game that you've already purchased for PSP digitally on your Vita. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big holdup. Number one, right?
Yeah.
And then number two, for some reason, and I don't know the ones that we really talked about this. PlayStation 1 games, even the digital copies that are on the PlayStation Network store, won't work on the Vita. So they're grayed out.
I don't understand
the logic
behind that.
Well,
maybe
no,
it's
that,
a technical issue.
But I think that's something that they're actually adding to the system at a later time. I think there was another story a while back where they said that feature
but they're not there right now. Yeah, so here's what you have. You have a system that's expensive that launched with a half, three-quarters launch title group for the dedicated platform that could have had all this great PSP backup, but because it's expensive, and only I think right now they're at a couple hundred titles that have been authorized for this authorization program, where you download this app off the PlayStation Network and you input some stuff off your PSN packaging, and then you get the digital rights after you paid another fee. What do you guys think about that system? Is that that won't work here? They haven't even said if it's going to work if it's going to be available in North America. But it wouldn't work here, I don't think. Right?
Yeah, it seems a little ridiculous, to be honest, that you have to pay another fee to continue playing a game you already bought on a new system. But
so the counter argument to that, and people have made this, is that you bought this game and you bought it for PSP on UMD, that doesn't mean that you're owed a digital
certainly
copy.
Certainly not. And if they're considering it as a service that you're purchasing, it just seems like a PR problem more than a, you know.
How so a PR problem?
Well, they've established a history of backwards compatibility in their products before.
Sure.
And to charge you by the title for that now seems...
Well, I think they just need the library. I think they needed the library. Specifically, I think they needed the ability to... You need
it's
to be
a
able
good
to...
launch library.
It doesn't have Monster Hunter.
Well, the Japanese, that's a problem in Japan, and it's something that
well,
I don't understand.
But that's where you launched. That's where you launched the hardware.
Yeah, but the Japanese launch software isn't very good to begin with. I mean,
I think it's all right. I mean, you
Ultimate
had
Mortal versus Capcom 3. I don't even know how well that's doing on consoles versus the handheld. The only one that really makes a splash here, I think, is the one that's outselling everything. Is everybody's Golf 6, which here is called. Shit, I don't even remember what it's called in North America.
Hot Shots,
which is a very big franchise in Japan.
And this version of it is great. I played it. It's a fantastic game. The ball physics are amazing. The amount of stuff that's there to play in solo play is fantastic.
Yeah,
and it's got network play.
Ridge Racers and Little Deviants and Touch My Katamari. I mean, is this it? This is their launch lineup?
No, no. So I thought this was... these are just some examples of why I thought it was very mixed bag. I mean, you've got Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom All 3, right. which is really strong. But then you've got like these other titles, like Touch My Katamari. Like, that's yet another Katamari game. I don't know. That was...
It really dropped off since it first launched on the
PS2. Yeah, I mean, there was a time that Katamari was really cool when it had a great novelty factor. I think it sort of, to a degree, ran its course. It still has its fans, obviously. But yeah. Ridge Racer is astounding. Like, the Ridge Racer is apparently very subpar.
Oh, I have yet to even see a Vita up close, so I'm not even sure it exists. So this is the thing I keep telling everyone in the office. I don't even think it's a real thing. I've seen pictures of it, but I still don't believe that it's a thing.
And Little Deviants is a PSN title.
Right.
And it's a completely unknown party-like, you know, minigame collection, which is fun. I mean, I played it. It's really cool, but it's just sort of, it's, what is it? Little Deviants? It doesn't tell you anything. Like, so, where's the one to sell the game?
So kind of like going, you have a list of things that here that might be the issue. I think one thing here that you have listed is the software is priced a little too high.
Yeah, basically it's $50 for Uncharted.
$50 for Uncharted, $40 for some titles, and a couple of other titles, like some of like the augmented reality fighting game is like $29. Some games are $29 for some software. There's a rash of technical issues with the first batch of systems.
That certainly could have scared people off. There was the whole shutting down and locking systems where you had to hold Sony issued statement about how to get it restarted.
Yeah. But the thing that sells software in Japan or sells hardware in Japan is big software, and the big software in Japan is Monster Hunter, you already mentioned.
For portable.
And 3DS has the exclusive grab on the next two Monster Hunter games. There were even images of retailers in Japan saying we're not carrying the Vita because it doesn't have Monster Hunter. Like, there was, I think I saw this on NeoGAF, and people just had posters up saying we're not carrying the Vita because it, you know what I mean? That really makes a difference in that region.
Now, yeah, I don't think we have really even have perspective on how big a deal that is.
Yeah, no, it's there are sections.
Well, if you want perspective, just look, I mean, the perspective is look at the 8-4 guys like John Riccardi and Justin. Like, they play, like, the ability to get together with your friends and go monster hunting is a thing. It's a very communal, shared, fun game to play. It was the backbone of the PSP culture.
Yeah.
And so to not have that ready to transition, to me, was just very foolish. Because even if it was just, I can still play my old Monster Hunter on this new machine, then I can transition to the new machine. You know, I can't really transition to the new machine if I still want to play Monster Hunter with my buddies and I can't play it on my new box.
I think all the stuff we're talking about adds up to the fact that I really think it's going to do better here than it did there.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I think it's going to have a fine North American launch. I think the launch lineup is very strong. Uncharted alone, I think, is going to sell systems. And Uncharted is a very Western game.
And we'll have Wipeout here for it, which looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And I think
we'll have Luminous, which looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking it up. So the last Monster Hunter game that came out that still sells well in Japan is Monster Hunter Freedom on PSP. There was a rumor that just hit right now that I was looking up. End of 2012, Monster Hunter, a sequel to that game, is going to come out on Vita. I think they realize that's an issue. Do I think that these sales numbers show that there's a big problem? I don't think so. I think what Jeff says is correct. I think when it comes here, it's going to do remarkably better than it did in Japan. I don't think there are people already like trying to put out fires or trying to start fires because of this news, but to me it seems like
LA arsonist.
To me it seems like it doesn't seem like that big of a deal at the moment right now. I mean,
all right, so gather your thoughts. When we come back, we'll wrap this up on the other side with a comparison to the 3DS, which we were ready to bury right when it came out, and yet has completely revitalized itself for the holiday, now up to over 4 million 3DSs in gamers' hands in North America alone. Was it the price cut, or was it software? We can use that as a pickup spot, and then we'll talk about some of the games we've been playing, all that and more when we come back on the other side of this break. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right, we're ready to get back and wrap that whole handheld discussion up with this, which we were just talking about in the break. So you got Zelda, a price drop, Mario Kart, Mario Land. Suddenly the 3DS is back. Will the Vita enjoy the same thing in almost the same way of coming out in America after the Japanese launch with more titles and be fine, or does it need to have a price cut before it even comes out?
Well, price cut wouldn't hurt, but I think it's going to be fine. I think the launch in America is going to be markedly different, and I think that the 3DS just needed software. Certainly the price drop helped, but it needed software. I had a 3DS at launch.
So did I.
Barely even touched it. Now I'm...
That Face Raiders game was pretty awesome.
It was. Now I'm playing 3D Land. Yeah. I'm playing Pushmo. I'm loving my device. I bring it everywhere I go.
Yeah?
Not everywhere, but a lot of places. Especially
really?
Coming off of a travel time here with the holidays, I was playing a lot of 3DS, a lot more than I had previously. And it's software. It's because there was stuff I wanted to play. And I think when the Vita launches, there's going to be a lot of stuff on that device that I want to play.
The Vita launch lineup in America looks fantastic.
Yeah.
There's some really great software. I mean, you have Sound Shapes, you have Uncharted, you have a lot of the titles that are listed here, like Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom.
Rayman
Origin. Unfortunately, they don't have... there's no co-op in that version. However, but still, it looks gorgeous, apparently, on a screen that I'm
excited
not sure exists, really. I really need to see one, is what I'm trying to say. I think that when it comes here, there's going to be a big difference. The only thing that we talked about last time, the last show, that I'm still a little on the fence about is the 3G version.
Right.
I think I was talking to Brian Leahy, who used to be on the show. He was telling me that he's going to buy the 3G version because he wants to prepare for what might happen in the future, which I think is...
Okay.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. it's a smart idea. Like, who knows what kind of software they're going to think up when, you know, the Vita's 2 or 3 years old. So maybe the 3G version sounds like a good idea.
And then not buy a 3G data plan for right now?
Yeah. Which sounds like a pretty good idea. I mean, they also have those first release bundle things.
They're going to release a Vita Go and stuff between now and then.
Just like the PSP Go went really well.
There's going to be all kinds of new...
Also, the only other person I know that owns one is Brian Leahy. And I own one as well. But so, I mean, that was the only problem that I had. There was a rumor that Amazon said that the 3G version was canceled, but then Sony said
silliness.
That's not happening.
Yeah.
That was just a mistake, in case people are didn't see that news. But I don't know. I think that this is sort of, people are kind of jumping the gun a little bit. When you look at the Media Create lists, which is the company that actually compiles the sales lists in Japan, it's always software driven. I mean, even the 360 sells a shitload of hardware when they get a Tales game or any RPG. It's all software driven, and they kind of pushed all their software out the door for launch. It got that initial jump, which usually happens. And as soon as software starts coming out, just like it happened to the 3DS and Mario games started coming out, people are going to start buying the hardware. I don't think it needs a
software. I don't think any of us are doom and gloom on it.
No. Good, because I think the whole doom and gloom thing is a little blown out of proportion.
It's
a little
premature.
It's a little silly to get going crazy, especially because it is such a badass piece of hardware.
It really is.
I mean, if you are an enthusiast who likes the high end of tech stuff, especially for your gaming, this is it. I can't think of anything. There's next to nothing that I would say, oh, well, you should have done this way on this. I don't know what else I would have told them to do with the device. It's crazy, right? I mean,
make me pie. If it make me pie, then I would.
If it make you pie. Zach, do you do any on the game goings? On the go gaming? On the game going?
I'll go. Okay. I'll go from time to time.
Want to go?
Not want to go. Not really. I'm not really. I don't have any of the portable handhelds or anything like that. I've gotten into a little bit of mobile phone gaming from time to time, but coming from a hardcore gaming background, it wears thin real fast.
Really?
Yeah.
So even with a hardcore gaming device like the Vita, are you up on the Vita?
Not at all. This is actually my first time hearing about it. I'm feeling a little behind.
But... Okay, so Vita, PSP-like device, same size and shape and form factor, two sticks that should have always had, OLED screen, so, pretty much the most amazing piece of display hardware I've ever looked at. I mean, OLED is just amazing. And what are you smiling about?
Nope, don't. What? Nope. It's stuff that's happening in my head. Fine.
Just keep going.
And
hit the gas.
Both surfaces of it are touch sensitive. So it has a touch screen on the top, and then you can touch the back of the device with your fingertips to manipulate things in the screen as well.
This is all very suggestive, this description.
I know.
Now explain the Vita.
I didn't want one until you described it. Now I can't stop thinking about it.
It's pretty sexy. I mean, it's basically PS3 quality in your hand.
Wow. Which
is, it's very impressive.
Yeah,
that is
pretty amazing. Yeah.
So I think it's going to do well here, but...
So would you carry one of those around?
I'd be willing to try it out. I haven't been real hip on handhelds since probably the what was the last one I had? It was probably 20 years ago. It was a Sega
Game Gear?
Nomad?
Or even earlier than Game Gear, I think. What would have come out around the same time, like a little bit after the Genesis?
The Nomad, which you plug Genesis
cartridges
into.
Maybe it's the Game Gear. Maybe it's the Game Gear.
Sounds like Game Gear.
How many batteries did you need to play?
Too damn many.
Too damn many. That was probably the Nomad.
And I was always running out of
Game Gear. Either one, really.
I remember getting I got a tonsillectomy when I was 18, and my girlfriend got me a Sega Game Gear and Echo the Dolphin.
Yeah.
All things, nice. And I just played the crap out of Echo the Dolphin for 2 weeks.
And ate ice cream, I assume.
Yeah. Actually, when you get a tonsillectomy when you're 18, it's not nearly as much fun as when you're like 8. I just sat there and I didn't have nearly as much ice cream as I did codeine.
Wait. How is that not more fun?
18-year-old. They don't even do those anymore, I hear.
What? Tonsillectomies?
Why wouldn't they do tonsillectomies?
I hear they don't even...
I don't think they cut them out as aggressively as they used to.
No, they don't.
The doctor doesn't get as mad before the surgery.
Hold still!
They used to go in there and take the whole things and the adenoids. And
now they do with lasers.
Yes, they use laser beams, but of course.
I think I got lasered.
Did you?
I think I got lasered. But yeah, it used to be, like parents, you get a sore throat and boom, your tonsils are out.
Yeah.
But...
Your friend gets chicken pox, they'll be like, oh, go get around and we want you to get chicken pox too. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little counter.
I had that. Anyway.
So I think the one thing is I'd like to sort of also bring up out of what Zach said, and this is sort of something I've been thinking about going into the new year, is we talk a lot about handhelds, and obviously every time we bring up the handheld space, people get on us for a number of reasons, like we don't talk about it enough, we don't know what we're talking about, we confuse, handheld hardcore gaming with what happens on iPhones and mobile devices. And I think that, I've been thinking a lot about this over the holiday break, that the iPhone OS world, especially of gaming, is not a component of the handheld space that we think of with 3DS or with PSP, and that this whole notion of them being in competition with one another is sort of silly. That doesn't really apply, because it's its own, whatever you think one way or the other about the games that are on it, the iOS is a gaming platform, period. Like, let's not be silly about that anymore. It's become its own thing. And I think it's not only become its own thing, it's really established itself as a new universe of gaming that is its own thing. It's not like competing with 3DS and PSP. It's not competing with consoles either, because the kind of experiences you have are just completely different. There's an upward ceiling of, I don't know, what do you think, like $5 or $6 for an iOS game? At least for your phone.
Yeah. And companies try to go over that and they're never really successful. Square Enix tries a lot with their RPGs and it never really works out.
And the experiences are very quick and digestible, and it's just not the same world. And I don't think, I've probably been guilty of these comparisons before. the more I think about it, I don't think that those experiences in any way preclude having fun with 3DS games or having a spot for your 3DS or your Vita and PSP games, because they're just that much different. They really aren't apples to apples.
You're not wrong, but
you're not right either. All right,
I think it's silly to ignore, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show, but silly to ignore the fact that there is some cannibalism happening in those two markets. Firsthand anecdotal experience, seeing my 7-year-old nephew over the holidays. You know, he loves his DS, and he just got a 3DS for Christmas, and he freaked out, loves it. He would rather, if you handed him an iOS device with a loaded full of games, he would rather take his DS or his 3DS any day of the week. It gives him a meteor experience. He can sit with that for hours at a time and play his TMNT and he plays Lego Batman, and he goes nuts for that stuff, right? He loves it. And that's valid. That is absolutely valid. And even as adults, I think we get juicier, meatier, more interesting experiences on those dedicated devices. However, I do think that it's silly to ignore the fact that for a significant portion of the public who really just wants to have something with them that they can play in downtime, it's easier to just have something on your phone.
And exactly what you just said, there was one word in there that you used, which is why they're not the same thing, and that is downtime. Because 3DS and PSP gaming is, I'll use maybe even air quotes and say that's real gaming. Because you're going to get in and you're going to game, and you're going to sit down and play a game. Whereas,
but I think
Jetpack Joyride is, I've got 30 seconds to blow. Let's see how many meters I can go.
But I think that there is a significant portion of people who would buy those devices in the past simply to have with them when they were bored. And,
I don't know,
and now your phone does that.
Because really,
I don't know.
That's suggesting that someone's going to play a 30-second blast of Mario 3D Land, and that doesn't make any sense.
I'm completely with Garnet on this one. I think that the handheld market. I think it's two completely different demographics. You know, like your handheld market is a market of gamers. It's console gamers who want to have a portable console experience, whereas your mobile phone gamer is gaming for your non-gamer. That's how I look at it.
Hmm.
And some of those games are more game-like than others, you know?
Sure.
I mean, so look, as I've been tweeting about, I switched over to the iPhone platform over the holidays. And one of the things that was appealing to me about it is that in the mobile space, it is by far the lead platform for gaming. And there are a number of games that are either out only on iOS or out significantly early on iOS. And I really find them fun to play with. And I want to, you know, as someone who covers this marketplace, I think it's a really important part for me to be more rounded. And one of the things I think is really interesting about iOS is that there are a number of indie games that elect to come out on this platform. And I think what you're seeing like on the iOS platform is a couple of things happening. You see indie games that are a cool creative concept, and then at some point in time, the developer or designer says, oh, you know what? This would work really good on iOS, and I can get into iOS relatively easy, so I'll do it that way. And then you're also starting to see a lot of folks now that are not – I mean, I don't think it's fair to call some of these produced games indie games anymore just because they're on iOS. You know, there's a clear formula for making a, you know, 2 to 3 minute experience, packaging it up in a nice set of graphics, putting it together with a professional team and getting it cranked out as an iOS game. And there's a huge market developing for that. So this has become its own world. It's become its own thing. And it's entirely separate from 3DS, because having this, I was like, okay, I'm going to play Jetpack Joyride. That's fun. I'm going to go back to playing Ellis because I thought Ellis was blast.
I
had those
things. You guys have a point. I just don't think it's as cut and dry. I don't think it's completely separate.
But the moment that I had more than a couple minutes, I pulled out my 3DS. And despite the fact that I just moved over to this phone, I played through two worlds now of Mario 3D Land because Mario 3D Land is awesome.
Well,
and when I had time to play,
compelling,
I wanted to pull that
out. Experience trumps everything. Compelling experience. Well, if you're dying to play... if you're dying to play something on your iPhone, I think.
But if I have that, raises the question: Can a mobile phone provide an experience that's as compelling as a handheld?
I don't think so. Not for more than a couple of minutes.
I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case.
I don't want to sit down and burn. If I've got more than a couple of minutes, then I'm going to grab my 3DS or my PSP because I the games I can play there are more the games that are going to engage
me. Well, I know we disagree about Sword and Sorcery, but for me, that experience...
That might be a game changer.
That's an example of something.
I'm not arguing. Now we're talking about iPad, too.
I want to be clear because the audience misconstrues a lot of this discussion, especially for handheld. I'm not attacking the 3DS or the Vita. I'm rooting for both of those. And I'm not arguing that the iOS is better or whatever. I just think that I'm just trying to make clear the relationship they have in the marketplace, in my view. That's all.
Well, I think the iPad does, by virtue of its, first of all, just the screen size, bring a different... It's a weird device in that it's upsetting to that to the notion of these separation, because you can do a much more meaty experience on this device, as with Hunters HD, mm-hmm. which we both loved.
Yes.
And I would never play Hunters on an iPhone. Obviously, it'd be too small. You'd be fiddling mm-hmm. around with it. It'd be a pain in the neck. But on iPad, it works great. It's like really perfect for that.
Yeah.
And you know, there've been a couple of games where I'm like, yeah, these are really fun iPad games, and I will spend a little longer with them. But again, they still wind up being sort of that methodology game where even with Hunters, it's like I want to sit down and play a mission. But that's about all I want to do. I'm going to play a mission, and that's about it. I could sit down seriously with many PSP games or 3DS games and be sucked in and like play for an hour or two.
Yes. I think that is the differentiation between these devices. But I don't think that necessarily means that from a marketplace standpoint, there's not some cannibalism happening. I don't. Yeah. But we just have a difference of opinion.
All right, so we're disagreeing. How do you like that we're disagreeing? Zach, what were you playing over the holiday break time?
Well, I went back home for the holidays, back to Atlanta. My dad's got a Wii, and he doesn't use it anymore. So I put my hands to Guitar Hero World Tour and Rock Band The Beatles, which had been sitting on the floor for about a year or two, which was great fun. And then we came back here and over New Year's went and visited some friends who have a Wii and played some Just Dance, which was exhausting and humiliating.
As every holiday should be.
But the good news is my wife loves it. Mm. She loves it. And so...
Not a gamer, I assume.
Not a gamer.
Did she come into it with any kind of... reluctance, or is it fun time, happy dance?
Oh man, she jumped in with both feet, if you'll pardon the euphemism. I mean, she was all over it. She loved it. Okay. She wanted us to get a Wii. Which for me was
a lot of those
awesome
party games like Rock Band and Guitar Hero do that to people who are non gamers.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the sort of death of the instrument game and it's kind of transitioned
surprised
into the dance game, right?
I'm really not surprised. You know, I when I first played Guitar Hero, when I first played Rock Band, I loved it. I was absolutely hooked. Couldn't get enough of it. Now I go visit my folks. You know, I've got some downtime, and I get through one song, two songs, and I'm bored stiff.
Hmm.
You know,
really?
I don't know why. It doesn't. I think it. The thing about it that appeals to me is my desire to acquire a skill and master it. You know, I get the same, my game of choice is real-time strategy. So I get the same high off of playing real-time strategy games, is trying to sort of master the medium. You know, beyond that sort of, either the social aspect of it, you know, if you're playing by yourself, without that, without a little something else, it's not enough to keep me playing. Mm-hmm. And once I sort of start to get, I think Jane McGonigal called it gamer shame, mm-hmm. which is like when you spend like 20 hours doing something and you have this feeling of accomplishment, but at the same time, you're kind of ashamed of yourself because you haven't accomplished anything that has any real value in life. Mm-hmm. You know, I sort of start to get that,
yeah.
which is like, wow, mm-hmm. I've spent all this time trying to get better at this thing. And then I turn it off and I'm like, and nothing in my life has changed despite all this time that I've and energy that I've invested.
But you five start a bunch of the Beatles songs and yeah. take that one to the grave.
Achievement. That's what
right.
achievements are for.
Look what I have created. Look what I've done.
It's interesting that you bring that up.
I'm really actually totally lost in this thought because, you know, I'm still a huge fan of guitar songs.
Yeah.
I mean, I love guitar games and I'm sort of lost in this idea of mastering mastering the, you know, the part, the like learning the fingering, the mastering the technique. Yeah. Mastering the technique element of it, which I've frankly never gotten off on. Like I kind of vacillate between hard and expert, but I've never been one of those guys who like, I've got to learn expert all the way through.
Because that may be a personality thing too, because I'm one of those.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. Yeah. I'm not entirely satisfied with the game experience unless I feel like I've sort of mastered the technique of it. But that's a very much like a me thing.
See, I love the music, and for me, those games has always been about has almost been a non-game, not a completely a game experience for sure. It was more about being interactive with the music.
And it's certainly where that entire genre went.
Which is why maybe the dance went.
Yeah. It started out as a game that you could fail.
Yeah.
And then little by little, it became an experience that you just have.
And that's probably why dance games got popular, because dance like really takes that game element out another level, because now you're just dancing along with the music. You're not pantomiming like you're playing an instrument. You're just getting into the flow. The same reason people like dancing in the first place, because you feel that sort of connection with the music. You're like jamming out to it. You're with the rhythm of it. But at the same time, you don't have to know how to play a keyboard or drums or the guitar.
And being silly is part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting. What I took away from what you said is I've been having a very parallel thought process, I think, or at least it seemed reminiscent of what I've been thinking of lately, because I've been playing so much of Sweater, so much that...
How much Sweater have you been playing?
A lot.
What level are you?
Well, it's not going to sound like much because I didn't get to play it for the whole time I was gone, which was 3 weeks.
Are you ashamed?
I am. Well, here's the thing.
Ashamed that you didn't get to play it? Or ashamed that you did get
that you're not the level that you think we think you should be?
Yes. Here's the thought that I came to. I don't like who I am when I'm playing an MMO.
Wow, that's a great dramatic pause. Yeah, I mean, I was sucked in completely. Yeah, that was great.
It's good radio.
Yeah, well done.
I love playing. I got into WoW. I've gotten into other. I got into Rift. There's a lot of games that I got DCUO, but when I'm playing an MMO and it's different than other games, I end up really not liking who I am, because it is very difficult to not have it be all consuming.
Oh yeah. Oh, you know I'm on that. You know I'm on that boat.
The hours melt away. I'm playing this desperate game of keeping up with the Joneses, because everybody else is out leveling me and I got to be able to keep
the people you started with.
Yes.
You're like, you know exactly where you are in that horse race.
Exactly. And especially if you're playing with Alex Albrecht, who will out level anybody any day, because that's all he does.
Get the boy needs a job.
No kidding. He just quit his job.
That's why Dignation's ending.
Yeah. And I get up in the morning and I don't even put any clothes on, and I start becoming that cliche that South Park lampooned so effectively.
If you start talking about poop socking, I'm leaving this
room. I did
not
poop sock.
I'm still stuck on the fact that now I know that you sleep in the nude.
Doesn't everybody? And more than that, like I won't. A phone call will come in and I can't pick up the phone because there's no pause and I gotta keep playing.
Siri, answer the phone.
Right. And you guys mock this, but there's something.
Oh,
very,
I don't at all. I agree with you 100%. I don't play MMOs for that reason.
I love it. I have a blast, but I don't like who I become.
There are people who I know who say that they won't play Skyrim for that same reason, because it's all consuming to
but
them
see,
as well.
It Skyrim is my story,
right?
I can stop it when I want.
I understand, but and the difference with the MMO is you have like this keeping up with the Joneses thing where you're competing and you're constantly, the carrot on the stick keeps getting a little further away from you,
right?
And you need to keep going after it because it's like your friends are carrying it behind them.
And it's a whole game system, a whole genre built around accomplishment. You accomplish these tiny little tasks constantly. You're constantly accomplishing another quest.
Tiny is one way.
But you never accomplish anything.
Yeah.
There's no actual accomplishment, because anything you accomplish only gets you closer to the thing that you don't have. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's always something else you need to be doing. And it drives me insane, because it's a direct time in to output out equation, right? And I'm constantly feeling the pressure almost that I put on myself.
There's never enough
time
in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's never enough time, and you never put in enough.
Exactly. And I become unproductive in my actual life and career. And
Well, look how
you
don't
like who I am.
Look how you introduced it to us. Well, it's not going to sound like a knot because I didn't get to play for 3 weeks.
And,
like,
and note that he still has not given what level he is.
Yeah. I'm 17.
Okay.
It's embarrassing.
That is embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
And I'm going to have to ask you to leave the room.
Yeah.
And get on the computer and start leveling.
No, every part of me wishes I was doing that right now instead of this. Not to, no offense to anyone in the room. But...
Is that why you're sweating so profusely?
Yes. I wonder what's
sweating for sweater.
Yeah.
You know, have you guys read Jane McGonigal's book, Reality is Broken?
No, but I saw her TED Talk where she talked to Bill.
Yeah, her TED Talk was fantastic. Yeah. I heard her talk here in Los Angeles, and I bought her book. And she talks quite a bit about that, about the appeal of games, the appeal of gaming, and she talks about MMOs and how they're appealing, why they're appealing, and about the phenomenon of gamer shame. She talks about... that there's some sort of like hour limit. If you play X number of hours in a week, it actually sort of improves your life. Like you've gotten some good entertainment in, you know, applied yourself in a way that is like fun and that you enjoy. But if you exceed a certain number of hours, and I think it was like 22 hours or 24 hours a week, like the good window was like up to 20 hours a week. But then once you hit like 24, the quality of your life starts to go downhill, or like that's what you know, quotes, studies have shown.
Mm-hmm.
And you get basically what you've described. I've experienced the same thing. I've had video games where not even MMOs, like 3D shooters. I did this with, I think it was Unreal Tournament 2004 or something like that, where I would put it on the shelf. And then I would learn very quickly that putting it on the shelf does nothing. I just take it off the shelf and I put it back in the drive. I finally would have to break them in half.
Really?
And put them away.
Wow.
When I was playing StarCraft, the first StarCraft game, I think it was playing Brood War, online, you know, had that same thing that I was describing before. I'm absolutely hooked. It's a great game, but I've got to master the technique. I've got to master the method. And finally, I gave it to my wife. And I said, I need you. Or actually, she wasn't my wife at the time. She wasn't even my girlfriend at the time. We were roommates. And I said, I need you to take this disc and I need you to hide it from me. And just hide it for a week. I just need a week.
Wow.
Within days, I was rooting through her drawers.
Wow. Really?
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm 12 step material all the way, which is why I don't really game very much anymore. Like when I do, I can totally get lost, but I'll play only like maybe one or two games a year in a really intense way these days.
I've only ever done that recently with my girlfriend and with a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
An example. Yeah.
It's funny, you know, in this segment, we went from one end of the spectrum to the other, an extremity. We went from iOS 2 minute, maybe in 30-second experiences to I can't get away from my MMO addiction. So
I hesitate to even go down the addiction path because it doesn't I don't feel about it the same way. It's not compulsive. It's like this weird pressure. It's almost maybe that's what a compulsion is. Maybe.
You know, denial ain't just a river in Egypt.
Well, hopefully you'll be compelled to listen to the rest of the show. We're coming back with two more halves. We're going to get to that 2012 stuff. We'll let Jeff also gloat a little bit about his great NFL season. By the way, congratulations are in order as well, because this year he won a little pick'em league that we're in, going away. Outstanding record.
It's a big league, too.
Yeah.
I beat a lot of people.
And you were against the spread. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I was as surprised as anyone. Yeah.
You are the Swami for the season, but we're going to test you because we have the playoffs coming now.
Playoffs?
There you go. So stick around. We'll be right back. Things discussed during the break there, Greyhawk, Settlers.
We had a tabletop nerd off. tabletop nerd off. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
It was pretty damn epic. And Zav asking, are we actually going to talk about any games we played this week? Because I'd like to talk about Sweater.
Yeah, so, that'd be nice.
Well, since we brought it up and you made it level 17,
do
you guys
hate yourself
about
or are you okay? Are you cool?
No, see, the difference is that you, I don't know, is this, did you say this during the break or during the show of how long it took you to hit 17?
Yeah, it was like 2 days.
It's 2 days. Wait,
that's a lot of playing.
I played within 2 days, not 2 days worth, but I'm only at like level 7. I was in the middle of doing a bunch of other shit, but I'm not as hooked, obviously, as you would because you are.
Did you join Wound in the Force?
I did.
And are you Alliance also with us? Yes. So you're on the same groups.
Well, we haven't grouped up yet because he had already left
all right.
To Toronto, and I was about to go to Toronto.
One last little piece of like, let me get my head around this. What character class did you create?
Jedi Knight.
Okay, so you made a Jedi Knight.
Well, see, now that's not really the class, right? So that's you don't.
That's the starting class, and you have class. To. And then
so you're
like,
going to choose between Sentinel and Guardian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which you're going to choose,
I don't know.
I'm a Sentinel, actually.
Okay.
So you did...
Guardian is a healer class, I'm assuming?
No, they're both DPS classes.
Okay.
Actually, you can be I think you can tank with Guardian as well.
Okay.
But the Sentinel has...
I can see Zach starting to go, this is sort of like D&D. I could be into this.
No, it actually is. It's a lot like 4th edition.
We may end up ruining your life. I'm not like going to lie to you.
You've got the tank, you've got the damage guy, you've got the healer guy. Yeah, that's
a holy trinity of... But yeah, the Sentinel is the dual-wielding lightsaber guy.
Then I'm going Sentinel.
Yeah, he's pretty badass. So that's the same class that I'm playing as
yeah.
well. What are you going to play, Garnet? You're going to play Smuggler, right? You're going to play Smuggler.
Of course.
Smugglers have the most fun... For sure, because during the dialogue phases, you can actually like flirt and have relations
Sweet.
With ladies, which I know Sweet. You enjoy.
Oh yeah.
If you're a Jedi, they always go, "What? You're a Jedi?" And you're like, "Flirty, flirt, flirt," and they're like, "You are a boring monk, dude."
So what are my options as a smuggler? What will my option my path when it forks?
Gunslinger and smuggler.
A gunslinger.
All right,
I don't know what it means, but I
don't know. Wait, gunslinger and.
If you're a smuggler, do you just keep dropping your cargo all the time?
Yeah. No, gunslinger and...
Drop the cargo button.
What's the other one? I can't remember. But anyway, because I'm not that playing that class. But.
All right. So now, back to what we're Zav. Tell me about your like getting started thing. Because that was what I was most interested in. I needed a little framework.
Scoundrel. Sorry.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, I don't know. I might want to be a scoundrel.
It sounds cool. So I'm not into Star Wars. I'm not really into MMOs. But the thing that I really enjoy about the game is the thing I think everyone's talking about is the dialogue. And how everything is presented to you the way a BioWare game is versus, and I have played World of Warcraft for about 2 weeks and I paid for about 6 months, which is, I was a level 35 idiot. And
level 35 idiot.
And, but the thing that I did, that a lot of people who even played that game all the time say is like, oh yeah, just give me the quest and they'll like, most people I would assume would just skip the dialogue. They don't read it. They don't care.
Well, there's not dialogue.
They want,
it's a list of
it's like a
quest.
Sure. How many things do I have to kill in the next 10 minutes? So the thing that I really enjoy about this game is the choices, obviously, that you make. I also like that the battle system is active. When I was playing World of Warcraft, it's one of those games where you kind of like, it's like Rompo Peel of MMOs. You set and forget it. You can walk away. It doesn't really matter. Like you hit attack and you keep attacking that enemy because that's in your crosshairs. Whereas I think in Mists of Pandaria, that character class is active, which means you have
class.
To the monk. You actually have to keep hitting the button,
yeah,
or keep hitting the skills.
It's not basically the games play the same. It's a very minor difference,
well,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like in the basic attack for Star Wars versus World of Warcraft, I kind of felt like okay. Set this guy to attack and I can look down at my meter and kind of figure out what I'm going to do next as he's attacking with a normal attack. In Star Wars, it's different because you have to constantly manage that stuff.
Effectively, it is basically the same. Unfortunately, I think in both games, basically you're just watching your cooldowns.
Okay.
You're just watching your cooldowns. That's how you play both of those games.
Then you just ruin everything that I like about the game. Well, I mean, that was one little thing that I found to be interesting about it.
Right.
Because I had played, and again, I don't play a lot of MMOs, so anything I say is going to be argued anyway. But the dialogue and the thing that I like, but the thing that I enjoy is BioWare games.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, so far, in the time that I've played it, a BioWare game in that you have a very good story that's directed toward you. that was always my fear of this game, which is BioWare's really does a good job of empowering you as one singular person to save the world. How are they going to do this on a massive scale? And from what I hear, when you're grouping up and everyone sort of like makes their choice and you kind of wait to see, like, am I going to be the one who talks? And like the conversations and the stories that I've heard from people who are playing this game, that part of it really excites them.
Yeah.
And although I don't like the genre as much as other people and I don't like maybe the setting and story, I think that part of it is what's going to kind of like hook me in. And I'm playing it still. And I think that I'm going to keep going, see how it goes. Yeah. I would like to try the grouping stuff. The only thing that I think is disappointing is that it's 4-player maximum for going out on.
If you do an ops.
Yeah.
I did an ops. We were trying to take down a world boss, and there were 16 of us.
But I mean, like, in your group, can you not mm-hmm. only have 4 people in
It's like doing a raid.
Okay.
But yeah, normal party situations, it's 4.
Yeah. And you have to kind of jettison your companion at that time.
But that's the other big... So, as you said, the story stuff makes a huge difference, and it's all really... thanks to Zach and his voice work.
That's right.
Yeah.
I am all the voices in the Old Republic.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how much of a difference it makes. And I really am surprised at how well integrated that style of really single player gameplay is into a MMO, very traditional MMO framework. That's really my biggest disappointment, is that as innovative as it is on a number of fronts, storytelling wise, it is WoW. It is exactly, watch your cooldowns. You play in the exact same way, and there's a familiarity there that's nice.
It's interesting that you say that, because for me, someone who doesn't really play WoW, and someone you who have played a lot of it, to you it seems like by the numbers on that side of it,
quite literally.
But for me, it seemed like an interesting thing, because I had just played. When I went to BlizzCon, I played World of Warcraft there and noticed the difference between the multiple classes and the new class that's coming out in the next expansion. And I found that slight difference was kind of an interesting thing that they've decided to do. But for you,
it's not as big of a difference as, say, Conan tried to do with actually physical combos and stuff
didn't
like that.
Play that.
But
say that the DCUO, I prefer the DCUO approach to it, which was sort of like you were playing Infamous.
Yeah, it's much more a console game. Yeah.
But if Terra ever gets finished, I'm really interested in... Or not finished. If Terra ever comes out in North America, I'm interested in that.
The other big thing, though, that must be said, I think, is the companions and how much of a difference playing with companions brings to the table. And it's really pretty thrilling, I think, as somebody who's experienced with WoW and didn't play a hunter. Now everybody's basically a hunter. And it really makes the game soloable in a really profound way, because your pet, basically, your companion, can be the tank if you're a DPS class. It can be a healer if you're a tank class. It fills that second role in a really, and it does it in a really fun way. And it's cool because it's Star Wars, and you get droids, and you get cool like bounty hunter type dudes, and all that. It just aesthetically is really cool, and you can customize them in really fun ways. And then you can send them out and have them do your dirty work for you. They do the crew skills for you. So like the crafting and gathering stuff, mm-hmm. they can assist you with. That feels really refreshing and fun. And it makes, and the whole combination between a story that is presented to me very cinematically and the companion stuff makes the game soloable and fun in a solo way much more than any other MMO. But when you're in a flashpoint and you're in a group, they really did a smart thing with making this sort of random roll to see whose choices are going to be the ones that are pervasive. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of like always hoping that your thing's going to roll higher, and then you get social points. And so it's all just a completely random game of chance, but it still adds a bit of fun and a bit of something to look for while you're playing.
I will say the only thing that I've seen of the game that seems to be what some friends that are playing it, they say is disappointing, is that the space combat is cool, but the actual act of it looks very strange. Like, I don't know, have you played in
space combat? I haven't gotten far enough to get to 20.
I think you get it like 20. 20. Yeah. When you hit 20, it's sort of like, and there's videos of this online of like, it's literally you use their mouse cursor to click on things to shoot missiles or laser beams or whatever, lasers as they're called. in the technical scientific world. And it's just like literally this ship is just like really looks really wonky, which is strange because overall I think the game looks very nice. I think it's a very good looking game.
Oh, it's very good looking, especially if you do the little hack to turn on any aliasing, which for some reason is you have to hack to do. It really is pretty.
All the glitches though that have been really interesting.
Lots of glitches.
Yeah, like the dancing glitch. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
It's literally like, what happens is if you're in the middle of a fight, I think they actually patched it out today or yesterday.
Oh, I did see that in the patch notes.
You hit like, if you type get down and your character starts dancing, everyone stops attacking you.
Yeah.
That was a
glitch. Can't blame them.
That's a feature.
But people were getting like, I think there were like account bans for like some people were finding a way to take down enemies that were way above their level and loot things that were way above their level. And they ended up getting banned for doing that.
Well, I can only speak to the stuff that's happened to me. And there's been a lot of glitches. There's been times where I log in and my map doesn't work and I have to log out and log back in. I've had tons of glitched out crafting nodes. Nothing huge, but there are lots of little
Do you
minor
think
glitches.
That George Lucas is going into the code and rechanging everything?
I think the code is actually in his goiter.
Okay. Is that what's happening? All right. Yeah. Sweet.
Garnet's getting a call.
Not me.
It's not me, is it?
It must have been
it's
you.
Not me.
It wasn't me.
Who knows who it was? Ooh. It was nobody. Secrets.
Anyway, I think that the other thing that it, you know, as a Star Wars fan, and you are strangely not, Zav. You're a Star Wars fan, right, Zach?
Yeah.
Because you're a human male in between the ages of...
Yeah, my first Halloween costume was Yoda.
There you go.
I've also never played D&D, as I was trying to explain during the break.
So one of the reasons that I've been trying to power level so fast is I want to get to, like, the good Star Wars stuff.
The opening stuff isn't good?
No.
Oh.
It's all prequel trilogy crap. You're in Coruscant. And the cool
But it's not even contemporaneous with that, right?
Well, no. And that, don't even get me started on that. Because here we are. I mean, the whole logic behind all this is suspect, and it gets me a little annoyed if I put any thought to it. In the sense that we're a thousand years before Star Wars, the movies happened, right? And it looks like about a 5-year difference between technology, right?
Well,
and you,
in the future, things age differently.
I want to know what kind of culture.
In the future, a toaster is still going to look like a toaster.
What kind of culture?
When they get it right.
Comes up with blue holograms that are interlaced and look like ass, and is like, you know what? We're good. We're going to stand pat on that tech
for the next 2,000 years.
We're going to no more innovation. We're going to stick with that. No one needs televisions. We're going to stick with the blue monochrome interlaced.
Dude, have you seen Leia in that? It's like so compelling.
They haven't. It's not for 1,000 years.
The argument there being that if they change too much to make it look like it's 1,000 years difference, it's no longer.
To be Star Wars.
Can you imagine the cost of the replacement parts? It's all in the efficiency.
In the original Knights of the Old Republic, which I believe is only 100 years before the series, the actual movie series, they have actual swords. And then when you start out here, you have like training.
I believe
wands.
Those are vibroblades.
They're vibroblades.
Whatevs.
The other thing, you know, the whole thing about Star Wars, I've been so soured. The prequels soured me, and the whole shrinking of the universe. Like, the fact that Hoth has become, like, a major point in the Star Wars media. Like, the whole reason they picked Hoth is because
no one knew about it.
No one would ever think that they're crazy enough to be on Hoth. Right? It's an inhospitable planet of ice. You can't be there. It's the last place in the universe anyone would look. Except for the fact that for thousands of years, there's been really important shit going down there.
Because Empire was the best of the movies.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyway, don't get me started. Oh, wait. You got me started.
By the way, this show just like jumped up in intensity by... By a factor of awesome. That was pretty freaking hilarious.
By a factor of 1,000 years!
I do love the Star Wars-iness of it. I just want to get to the good stuff. I heard Tatooine is amazing. I want to get to that. And I'm stuck
I thought that
in
was
this...
supposed to be remote also.
Yeah. Exactly, right? We hid Luke there because no one would think of it except that everyone goes there.
Well, they had that sweet nightclub.
Dude, Mos Eisley is very happening.
The entire game should just take place
and
in that
never
bar.
Has there been a greater... what is it? What is the line? Never has there been a hive of villainy and scum in the universe? Except that there's a cantina on every spaceport that is exactly the same and has exactly the same songs in the jukebox.
For 1,000 years.
For 1,000 years!
Once you've mastered the perfect song, you don't need anything new.
You're sticking with that and the blue hologram.
That was the greatest song ever written. That's the most popular song. Is dun 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 dun.
Yeah. Anywho.
Well,
but I really dig the game.
Next time on Weekend Confirmed, Star Wars freak out.
Yeah. I've. Did I tell you
to Star Wars fans, man?
Did I tell you that I don't like myself when I'm playing these games?
I'm sorry not to like you either.
My friend doesn't like you.
I don't like you either.
That's a reference I understand.
Best joke ever in the freaking Family Guy thing was like, why do they call it Hoth? It should be called Coldth. The best joke ever.
That is not a good joke.
That's the best joke
that
ever.
That is not a good joke, actually. And I know bad jokes. Trust me on this one. I know bad jokes. Wow. So I was actually just looking up here, Knights of the Old Republic, and they're talking about it. I thought it was supposed to be like 4,000 years in the past. Are you sure?
I thought it was 100 years.
I kind of pulled 1,000 years out of my ass, and now I've yelled it too many times.
I think I've heard that before. So
something like that. It's a lot. It's enough that it should be different.
The story of this game,
long ago,
4,000 years before the rise of the Galactic Empire.
So for which that
100, 4,000, whatever.
Whatever.
But it is cool.
I was trying to throw some logic. It's only 100 years, guys. 4,000 is way worse.
It's cool that your companion in the Jedi Knight class, your companion, I just got to the point where he starts talking about all the stuff that's happened. Like, he was the droid that was hanging out in Knights of the Old Republic. Hmm. And he, like, recounts his...
Wait, HK-47?
Not that one.
Okay.
Because it's T7 something or other.
Different one.
But anyway, he's talking about, this guy and that guy. And it's like, oh, I remember those guys from that game.
That's cool.
Darth, what's his
name? If you hadn't played so much WoW, would you really be so upset about it? I mean, the familiarity there is that system works for MMOs. It's really solid for MMOs.
Sure.
And I don't think that anyone's coming into this game looking for an imaginative MMO experience. They're coming into it for the Star Wars experience. I think BioWare had to nail the BioWare storytelling rich part of it. Isn't that where Galaxies fell short?
Sure. But
is it? I mean, did you play Galaxies?
I didn't. When we get Alex on the show, he played the living poop.
I would love to have someone say, "Oh, here's what they're doing right, and here's where they're really screwing up again."
Yeah, we'll get him on the show, and he'll talk your ear off about that stuff.
I mean, one of the big things is by being in this era, Jedis are prolific. And so they don't feel the need to do this. Oh, well, Jedi's a walled off garden and you got to really work to get there. Because, of course, if you're playing a Star Wars game, most people are going to want to be a frickin' Jedi.
Yeah. And it's cool that Jedi isn't just one class, that there are multiple classes of Jedi. And that's very smart of them. They did a lot of things very, very smartly. I just wish they'd been more progressive with the underlying mechanics of what an MMO is. I think Blizzard certainly will be in their next MMO that they are working on.
But that's their second MMO.
Right.
Again, this game...
I just wish we've had this kind of game, you know, it goes back to EverQuest and farther, but we've had specifically WoW for, what, 6-7 years now? I wish the underpinnings had been improved upon a little bit. I understand the tactical decision of let's give people something they really like and already know, and we have a blueprint of how this is very effective and works, and we add all this great story layer on top of that. I just wish the game was a little bit different.
All right. Well, strategy gamers like making tactical decisions. Zach will probably be with me on remembering fondly XCOM.
Actually, no.
No? You don't remember XCOM?
I was not an XCOM player.
Such a good game. Man,
you remember XCOM, Jeff?
Oh, you know I do. I love
really?
That game.
Didn't XCOM start out, I could be wrong here, but didn't XCOM start out as turn-based strategy?
It is turn-based. Turn-based tactical strategy.
I'm a real-time guy.
Really? Well, as a D&D player?
Do not have the patience for chess. No.
D&D is turn-based.
Well, D&D is turn-based, yeah, but that also has a social aspect, you know, so it's a different experience.
All right, well, so you might
then... Shitty comparison, Jeff. That was a shitty comparison. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Take him to the mat.
I already feel bad about myself.
1,000 years!
I do like it when you get excited about that stuff. It's pretty funny. Anyway, Zach, you might be excited to hear, though, that XCOM, with the slight appeasement, although I'm waiting for the backlash. as we're recording this on Thursday, 2K Games today announced a action strategy title coming out in the XCOM line. Now, this is to go alongside the first-person shooter thing that's been redesigned a couple of times by 2K Marin. This game is XCOM Enemy Unknown, under development by none other than Firaxis.
Very, very excited by all of this.
Which, of course, they of the Civilization line.
Yeah.
However, action strategy, console and PC, equal emphasis on strategy and tactical combat, managing resources, advancing technologies, all those sort of things you wanted to hear. The other, besides the fact that it says action strategy, which in the first place means it's obviously not turn-based tactical, is there, well, here's a quote.
I'm holding out some hope for that.
Action strategy? How about this quote from the press release?
Is Valkyrie Chronicles action strategy?
Oh, that's okay. But Valkyria Chronicles, Valkyria Chronicles is pretty awesome. Now, I really, really liked Valkyria Chronicles.
Right. Action strategy. Turn-based.
Turn-based, but with an action hybrid into turn-based. And I think that was a very clever system that unless you just straight up aped it, would be really hard to capture because that was pretty clever combat system. Anyway, so this quote from the press release, instantly recognizable to fans of the original XCOM while breaking new grounds in strategy games.
Well, I like the first part of that sentence.
Yeah, then there's the second part.
No, I mean, maybe there's... I trust these guys with a turn-based franchise.
Look, I mean, you can't ask for a better heritage.
Right. I love the fact that we aren't just getting this title in a first-person shooter. Like, I'll take the first-person shooter if you also throw me a bone and give me some sort of strategy game. So I'm going to reserve judgment on whether or not... I mean, if it's not turn-based, I'll be sad. But I think they can deliver something really fun. And I love those old XCOM games so much that I'm excited that there's new ones.
I think it will, by virtue of it being a console also title, that it will certainly be more leaning towards the real-time strategy side. Yeah. I think you'll see something maybe like War for Middle Earth, where you have active control over your combatants. I mean, you can probably zoom in a lot. I'm sure that they'll take some ideas.
Civilization Revolution.
Civ Revolution.
Well, that's a pure turn-based game.
That is still pure.
But I'm saying...
There's no action.
Right, but I'm saying this is also the developer behind the same title.
Yeah.
So they probably, you know, they did something just with management of, you know, the actual menu management and all the other stuff that they've learned from creating that first game.
Yeah.
I think bringing it to
on
XCOM.
Consoles? Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. We still don't know exactly. They haven't even shown screenshots. They've only shown that one thing.
Action. I'm just going to say that. Action.
Action.
One more time. Action.
Shooting someone in the face is action. I could just tell them to shoot them in the face rather than... No, I'm deluding myself. I know
he's thinking of Star Wars again.
Yeah, are you guys?
There's a lot of other potential influences coming out of the PC world as well right now. MH Silver challenged you a little bit, Jeff, on your comment about Minecraft causing a titanic shift in the video game industry. Why is it that you think that it'll do that?
Well,
explain yourself.
I think I did explain myself in the episode in which I said that actually, but it. I mean, I think it's a new type of game, a new genre, for lack of a better word. And I think that it's clearly shown from a monetary standpoint.
So bust it down a little bit. Instead of saying it's just going to be a new thing, say what are a couple of the identifying characteristics that you would say over the next few years we'll see games that have these elements, and that's where you'll see the Minecraft.
I think part of the game being creating the world in which you are in. I think that is going to have a big impact over the next 5 years. I think you're going to see a lot more games picking up that torch and running with it. And I think that's exciting. I think that's a really cool. I mean, I think Little Big Planet is in that discussion as well. And certainly kinds of things that have grown out of just pure level building and the mod community, all those things are sort of the predecessors to what this is going to end up being as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you've already seen some copycats. We just did a review this last week on TRS of Terraria, which is a very unique, different kind of game in its own right, but certainly owes a lot to that style. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And I think that in 5 years, we're going to look back and go, Minecraft is one of those games that's going to be in the Hall of Fame of video games.
I will say that the thing that I'm looking for, that I want to see what happens with Fortnite, which is Epic Games, their title that's sort of inspired by Minecraft. The thing that I love about Minecraft that they certainly did not do first, but the thing that I really enjoy about it is the randomness of when you start the world. And the world is, you know, you hit create world and it randomly generates this world for you and that's what you go and explore. If Fortnite does that and doesn't just give you the same world when you start that game, if it's not if it's not built already, if it gives you the opportunity to go back and play again and just focus on the strategy and exploration like Minecraft does versus...
Worked for Diablo.
You know what I mean? So that's the thing that I think would be really interesting about Fortnite if they're going that route.
And I'll add on to wrap up the little Minecraft idea. One of the things that I think is most interesting about this is the relationship that you build with your Minecraft world, building on what Zav spoke there about. You create, you know, you press that create world button and it creates this world. And then you have this unique relationship with it because you're playing in it. But then if I give you the IP address, you can come into my world. And now the things that you do have impact and meaning. I let you into my world. I don't necessarily have control. You could do something completely, you know, cataclysmic to it, or you could do something very productive and help grow it. But whatever happens, I've built this world. I suddenly have this godlike relationship with it that's persistent over however long I maintain that server and maintain that client sitting there running that game world. That's a really interesting idea that could apply in a number of ways to many games.
Well, there's a whole new level of ownership when you made it.
I mean, imagine if, like...
And you made it by playing. You made it by playing the game. And if you have that with good combat, great AI, and even some kind of story structure built in, I think you have something that is a really new kind of game.
I think there's a great implication there for the sort of open world games that something like a Grand Theft Auto falls into. Which is one of the games we'll be prognosticating about here when we come back on the other side. We'll get into some 2012 stuff since we didn't do enough of that for you guys to have fun with. Well, I don't know. We're not liquored up, but we'll come up with something funny to say, and then you guys can hold us to it later. Or maybe we'll look like geniuses and we'll all get rich and famous off of it. Don't go anywhere. We will be back to wrap this sucker up on the first Weekend Confirmed of 2012.
I don't like chocolate or money or sex.
You're out of order.
This whole show is out of order.
Order. Order. Order.
I don't like chocolate or money or sex.
Order.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Order.
You guys, by the way, stole my thunder, but...
Thunder, 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 thunder it up.
You're ridiculous.
Thunder, thunder it up.
You're ridiculous.
Thunder.
All right, you just got your thunder back.
Thunder, 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 thunder it up.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I don't like chocolate or money or sex.
You're out of order.
What do you know about Patriots?
Revolutionary, back in the day.
You're out of order.
Patriots.
Back in the day.
Hey, why are you firing me? I'm a goddamn gun.
Revolutionary,
what the hell is wrong with you?
Thunder, 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 thunder it up.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I don't like chocolate or money or sex.
Thundery P. So I realized I yell a lot on this show.
It's a thousand years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff, but we love you.
I need to take it down a notch.
Hey, I had a thought about XCOM. Do you remember the game Full Spectrum Warrior?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
That might be a direction they could go with it, because it was very tactical-oriented.
Full Spectrum Warrior in space.
In space!
Well, on Earth with futuristic stuff from the aliens, but set in the 50s or 60s or something.
I'm remembering that tweet. Can I say that tweet? It was XCOM, Enemy Unknown. Oh, wait, it's aliens. Favorite tweet of the day.
All right, so Grand Theft Auto 5 is one of those things we can jump into for 2012. Do you guys, I mean, what are the chances you think that it comes out this year? And regardless, how much pressure do you think is going to be on it? How much of a chance do you think it'll have to distinguish itself, or will it finally fall victim of its own weight?
I think 100% it comes out this year.
Okay, 100% it comes out this year.
E3 we get, or right before E3 we get a release date.
Okay.
And it's a hard date in one of those like memorable dates that they're going to, you know, drive into our brains.
Yeah. Rockstar and E3, they don't usually go hand in hand. They usually don't actually do
anything. Yeah, they're usually not there.
They usually don't actually show anything.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it is going to come out this year. You wrote, how is it going to distinguish itself? I think by calling itself Grand Theft Auto 5, that's how it's going to distinguish itself.
And being gorgeous and enormous.
Yeah, you know what I mean? People are super excited already because it's going back to San Andreas, which is a locale that people loved from the PlayStation 2, Xbox era. And it's modern. It seems at least modern, which that's the only worry I have about it. because I didn't have the same connection to Grand Theft Auto 4 that I did the old games, because the music, the references, and things like that. It's interesting that they're going modern. It seems like,
so you liked Vice more than, I guess.
Yeah, no, I love Vice City. Vice City was my favorite.
It was my favorite as well. I think that when they were working with those period type pieces, then they had a little stronger vibe to play off of. At the same time, the hardware wasn't there. Then they did 4, and 4, I mean, 4 was pretty awesome.
I love 4. People mess about 4, but I'm really enjoy that. 4. Really?
Personally, yeah.
Granted, the DLC packs were arguably better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They were building off of that platform. I mean, that's a pretty stout platform.
Oh, I don't think you can criticize the technology. I think it's a stunningly beautiful game 4. And an immense world, really amazing amount of detail to it. I just wasn't particularly drawn in by what I was doing, as I often say, moment to moment.
It does look very good. I think, I'm assuming it's still the same engine as Grand Theft Auto 4 was.
I mean,
it,
the developers, obviously Rockstar is super tight-lipped.
Right.
And I mean, to me, the reason I asked the distinguishing feature piece is because I feel like at this point, they are going to go for something unique. This genre that they arguably really wrote the definition for has become quite used.
Yeah.
I wonder, I had that instinct as well, but I've started to think that maybe their entire idea of doing something unique is narrative driven.
So I think,
I think that
would be distinguishing.
I don't think they're going to reinvent the wheel.
Which would be the first time, really, that they've... When, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4 was a big shift between the last Grand Theft Auto on console, because, you know... But this one, I think the question whether or not is there going to be that hook that they had between the sequels on the old platform, mm-hmm. I think narratively that does make sense. And there are shades of a city in the middle of a recession. If you watch that trailer, there's, you know, houses being boarded up. There's people... Well,
certainly money,
stores.
Money in the logo.
Right. You right. Know? There are apartment complexes that look like construction has ended because people have ran out of money. I mean, it looks like sort of it's taking its cues from, you know, politics today, as, you know, Rockstar has done in the past as well. That part of it, I think, is interesting. When they introduced the two extra characters in that DLC and it gave people different perspectives on the class warfare, essentially, of what's happening and the different kinds of people who live in this city, and you get to experience their stories, I think that is extremely interesting. So I would like to see, because we talked about, you know, a woman being a main character, and it doesn't seem to be the case, obviously, but it would be interesting if we can get multiple characters. There's a part in the trailer where this guy is talking about his family, and you see multiple characters. Two of them look younger than one, so it'd be interesting if it was this guy and his kids, and they live different lives, or you kind of experience the city from different angles. Because one thing about San Andreas that always struck me as annoying was to get from one place to another. It was like this huge task of like driving. It was such a big world, which I people love that about that game, but that was part of the thing that I didn't enjoy about it. It was so spread out that I think it'd be interesting if we could tell different stories in those regions.
And that would be the way you segued from when they're moved about from one section to another, would be by moving from character story to character story.
Right.
That's interesting idea. I don't know that they'll do that approach, though, because they've always been focused on a core character. Now, originally, when it first came out, I was thinking, you know, back in 4, they started playing around with multiplayer, and they had a lot of ideas there, and I think there's a tremendous amount of room still to expand upon how these sorts of games handle multiplayer and what you can do with them. You know, we're talking about Minecraft. I think there's like ownership of the city and the way things could become dynamic and change, and your world would be your world and you'd own it and people could come and play in it, but things that happen would be persistent. And then I thought, you know, though, I don't really know that that's their strength of where they have been or what they've seen been successful, even. Because 4, for as much fun as we got out of playing multiplayer, I've told those stories before, still never caught on that big as a multiplayer game. I mean, it's played considerable, but it didn't become like this big, big thing. And what they were most successful with was Damned and Gay Tony. Mm-hmm. And those were seen as successes based off the strength of their narrative and how much improved they were in character development and storytelling. And if they build off of that, the distinguishing thing about Grand Theft Auto 5 could well be, yes, it's still this big open world. Yes, there's still all these things to do. And we've taken another step at improving how great a story we can tell. Hmm. And that would be really cool. And this got me thinking about this, because one of the things that came up in our Game of the Year discussions was where to play Skyrim. Because Skyrim has been, you know, much talked about. We talked about on the show whether or not it should be considered because of its technical problems. When I actually sat down, you know, we've just turned in our voting for...
And to be clear, we did. It was considered in our Game of the Year discussions.
Yeah, so yeah. Skyrim absolutely was considered in our in the Shack News Game of the Year discussions. And we're doing a straight up 10 best games sort of list. It's top 5 are ranked, and then the next and the remaining 5 that garnered enough points will get honorable mentions. And when I sat down to cast my ballot, I wound up each of the editors cast their 5 in order rank. Skyrim didn't make my 5, but it wasn't at all because of technical glitches. As much as I've enjoyed the game, as much as I'm still playing, I'm still pushing myself through it and enjoying it, I've come to realize that there are pieces in there that I think need a lot of improvement to live up to the promise of the world. And I think that's the thing, is we get excited about Skyrim because the promise of the world is so very strong. But when it comes down to it, for me, it missed because the combat is still very rudimentary, which we've talked about before, and it still suffers from the core Bethesda role-playing game design structure, to me, which then to me it's a drawback, of their core story is not strong enough in comparison to the side stories or the pacing of the side stories, and the pacing of the game just winds up completely busted for me. And in that, you wind up with all this downtime doing all these things that are silly. And I mean, it was really, really glaring in the face.
That's because of your decision that you've made.
It is my fault. No, I understand. I will own those decisions. But part of the reason I own those decisions is because they give me all of these things to do, all these side missions, and they're just good enough to get distracted. And they're just boring enough to be bored with them before I get done with them. It's a number.
Well, I disagree with the boring part. I think that with great freedom comes, you know, there's the chance that you might get sidetracked and you might have downtime. But that's because of all of the freedom that you're given.
But that's not fun.
I find it to be very.
I'm sitting there next to Ariel, and she's playing Zelda, and she's getting close to finishing it. By the way, the ending of Zelda is freaking mind-bogglingly cool.
The entire game of Zelda.
That game is amazing. And I'm watching her have all this fun and like doing all these things and being excited. And in the same amount of time, I've wandered around a city, delivered a note, put on some clothes and gone to talk to a guy and ran down to the docks.
Yeah, but you could have done a lot of things. I think what you give up for not
wandered
having...
Wandered across the marsh.
Yeah, but...
I don't know. You're in one breath. You're arguing for Zelda, and you're not mentioning that game could have been amazing at 20 hours rather than the 50 hours that they've added to it, which is just a lot of it is filler.
There's a lot of tedium in that game as well. Yeah. But
what you're tedious.
What you give up? Believe me, it was my number 2 game of the year.
Damn,
Skyrim. I mean, Skyward Sword is awesome, but what you give up for not having that structured narrative, you're not having that. Very linear experience, you get freedom, you get the idea of being able to truly explore a world.
I hear you.
And that's a very special experience.
I almost wish, this obviously has to do with my tendencies and my personality and the way I play a game. I wish that the designers of Skyrim had built in a sort of quest AI that's running in the background and would say, okay, Garnet right now has been 20 minutes since he got this next part of the core quest. And you know what? It's really actually pretty important. And he probably ought to get the fuck on with going to get the next part of this quest done. And so when he comes into Solitude, instead of having all of these quests active in Solitude, just in essence, gray them out for right now. Let them talk.
Do you think that's not the experience?
That would be a far superior experience, because then now you're saying, as a designer, I'm going to take back control of this game. I'm going to give you a little more narrative.
That's exactly
focus.
What's special about these games is the
I
fact
disagree.
That I'm wandering through what is ostensibly a city.
I'm not saying make
them
go away.
Doing whatever I want to do, experiencing people in whatever order I experience
and
them.
In the process of it, losing the point and getting bored with it and putting it on the shelf and forgetting it.
Well, I didn't have that experience. I didn't have that feeling, and it's valid that you did, but I'm telling you that I will trade the possibility of that for the benefit of having a true role playing experience, but where I am.
It is a true.
There's
it's
nothing
still a true. No. Don't be prejudicial like that. It's still a true role playing experience.
No, you're talking about force feeding the player.
I'm saying just exercise a little control.
I actually had this experience recently. I have a Mac, so my gaming options are pretty limited. And one of the few RPGs that are available for the Mac is Neverwinter Nights 2.
Okay.
And I had the same. I was a huge Baldur's Gate fan.
Yeah.
The thing that I loved about Baldur's Gate was that you had a core storyline that you could follow.
Yep.
You had side quests that you could follow, but it wasn't a true open world. You know, like you'd go to this region, and then you could either take the direct path to town, or you could wander over here, fight some orcs, and then sort of wander your way back. Maybe you run into something else, or some side quest, or some little encounter. But for the most part, it sort of kept you on a particular path.
Which I think is what Dark Souls does, doesn't it, to a certain extent?
Well, Dark Souls, there is basically a thread that you're going to follow, but over the course of time, you're going to go back and revisit places many times.
In terms of sort of there is this hub.
Yeah.
And sections in which you go
and
explore.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, the problem with Neverwinter Nights 2, which I fully expected to be as good or a better experience than Baldur's Gate was, the problem with Neverwinter Nights 2 was that it was completely linear. You'd go from point A to point B to point C to point D. If point E was next, but you could see point F, the gates to point F would be closed.
Right.
So you couldn't accidentally wander in. There were no side quests. There were no places that you could just wander into a random encounter. And the experience that coupled with a kind of a dull narrative and really poor voiceover, which I'm particularly sensitive to considering what I do for a living, I put it on a shelf. I finally put it on a shelf, which really gets to what I think the core issue of what it sounds to me like you guys are arguing isn't whether the game should be this way or that way, but just what the optimum balance is of compelling core narrative versus side quests.
That's my experience. You're arguing that you are getting sidetracked because they give you too many options and that you just want them to you want to see the main quest narrative thread so you know what to do next and where to go next.
You can
go into your menu and set that as your waypoint.
I know.
And just
I fully understand that, but I play games in an immersion sort of way where I'm in the world. And so what I'm saying is...
And then you want them to stop what you're doing and then pull you along somewhere else?
Well, Garnett made a point early on, which I think is key to his argument, which is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you felt that the core narrative just wasn't compelling enough on its own.
But then when I think about what the core narrative is, it's actually really cool.
It's like a compelling idea.
Right.
But was the execution not that compelling?
Because you sort of drift away from it, and because the distances in Skyrim and the time, both physical distance and time distance, the further you get separated from that last time that someone told you what the next thing you need to do on the quest is, the less compelling it gets, the less the pull is, because I've also gone and done this, and I've gone and done that, and I've gone and done the other thing. So I'm really thinking in terms of, don't we have a sophisticated enough platform technology now where I could actually have some sort of AI running on top of the game, like a game AI that's not a system in the game, but it's a system for managing the game.
Yeah.
That's looking at how I, as a player, am playing the game.
You want a game director like Sin Episodes tried or something.
Exactly.
Left
dynamic,
for Dead.
Like Left 4 Dead. Dynamically adapting the world so that, for instance, when I come into Solitude, I don't want this stuff to go away. I want to be able to enjoy that stuff. But if I'm like been piddling around so much that it's just gotten silly, then instead of having the opportunity,
but that's your choice.
But I will tell you the thing
I realize it's my choice. But I also want to have a great narrative experience. I'm playing a game.
You can experience. I mean, you can. I think this was in. Oh God, this was in some book. I can't remember what it is. But overchoice. It's the problem of overchoice.
Yeah.
Is when you have like three choices. You can just pick the one that suits you best and be done with it. When I have 50 choices, I can't make a damn decision.
That's
a
personality thing, though, I think.
I admit that.
I agree with Zach. It's a universal trait, but what is so...
But is it ever daunting to you? Or like, oh, I have all these missions in my menu. I have to give up because I don't know what decision to make.
I certainly have the situation of feeling overwhelmed. Sometimes I'm like, I'm definitely not going to pick up any more missions because I just want to get the ones I have done. But that's my choice to do. And I think we have plenty of games that are like what you described, which are
I can't think
more
of any.
The Witcher?
Okay, I can't think of more than a couple.
Well, The Witcher does it in a very different way, obviously. I will say, in comparison, I think I just talked about San Andreas and how I don't like, it's such a big world, getting from point A to point B is something that I don't enjoy. And the difference between like San Andreas and Red Dead and Skyrim is that Red Dead and Skyrim did something that San Andreas doesn't, which is as I am exploring, as I'm going from point A to point B, I am seeing the rest of the world in action, mm-hmm. and I can stop and get a quest or meet people or do things that you can't do in a game like San Andreas. So I think
the thing that bugs me about the GTA series is that when I get into a quest, it's a walled off garden.
Yeah,
that
sure.
And it's this hub.
That's
to
always
hub.
Been.
It's
yeah.
this. It's this point to point kind of.
It's totally linear.
Completely. Well, it's linear with this weird.
And even locked into
weird,
like it's almost like it's instanced.
Like I'm going to have to do these two quests. I can choose which order to do them in because they're both available on my map right now.
Yeah.
But once I'm inside that quest, I'm inside that quest, and I either fail it or finish it.
Did you feel that Red Dead did a better job?
Yes. Okay. I had more fun playing Red Dead than I've
Which
had
really
playing
only disguised
any of the GTAs.
It really only just disguised
the random events.
The
it was usually the same random events over and over again, but it gave you things
so
to do in
I
between.
Want those games to be more like traditional role-playing games and less like adventure
so
games.
So, Jeff, if you like that, in my little ideal fantasy world of what I was dreaming of, it would be disguising this such that you would never know that you were missing out on those options because you would just be having a great time and you would still feel you had plenty of options. If I'm doing it wrong, then you don't feel like you have enough options. You would still feel like this is a dynamic world. I have lots of options. There are lots of things I could be doing. Yet at the same time, as a designer, I'm making it just enough where I'm keeping you focused that you're moving through the main part of the story and enjoying that. So you're on this massive quest and doing some other things.
So then is your issue that you're sort of seeing the smoke and mirrors while the trick is being performed?
I know I don't want you to see this movie.
No, but I'm
so you don't want it to go
what
as
your
far.
Experience of Skyrim.
With Skyrim, I literally am at the point where I have all these, like, I hear all these, like, oh, and this is another side quest. Here's another side quest. So I need to stop and say, okay, I need to go back to the quest menu, highlight the primary quest, and go back to just doing that and ignore all these other
right.
people.
But so you don't want it to go as far as, like, Fable 2, where it literally gives you a breadcrumb
trail. No. Okay. That's really, like, shoving it in your face.
Okay.
No, this would be absolutely indetectable.
I think what's so exciting about these games and why there are very few games like them, and whenever I say that, people are like, what about Witcher? What about this game? What about that game? And I'm like no.
You just
I'm saying The Witcher is not like this. Yeah. My whole point is it's not like this, is that The Witcher is directed in its own way, and you are in a smaller subsection of the overall world when you're doing a series of quests, and then you move to the next small section. This game...
So Baldur's Gate works too.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's so amazing about these Bethesda games, and it's like Ultima, and that's why I love it, it's because the games I grew up with, Ultima, Might and Magic, Wizardry, those games where it's just a world. It's just a place. And everything is teeming with life. And yeah, you can get in over your head doing stuff, but I've never felt more like I'm in a real place with real shit going down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this person's talking to me, and that other person talked to me about something completely different that didn't have anything to do with it, but that's how life is, you know?
Yeah.
It feels much more like a real place than a video game.
I agree with. I do want to say very quickly, going back to the GTA thing, one thing I would love for a company to do is to use an engine like Frostbite too, to create an open world game like that. So you can have that Minecraft idea of, hey, I fired a rocket when I tried to kill a drug lord and now there's a giant hole in a building over here, like shaping the world based on the mayhem that you create too. I think that would be really cool.
All right, so since we haven't done anything crazy, I'll throw open the ultimate crazy one for us to wrap the first show up with, which would be from Ground Flyer: with the new console cycle on the horizon, what innovations do you think are needed for the big three to be successful? We know that Wii is coming with the Wii U sort of attached tablet design. Is that going to be enough? What do you think Xbox and PlayStation may do to counter as they get ready to throw new consoles our way?
I think the next Xbox will get announced this year. I think it will be built around some sort of Kinect functionality that will be a core component of the next Xbox. It'll be have whiz-bang graphics that'll wow everyone.
Whiz-bang graphics.
Whiz-bang graphics. Now
with whiz-bang.
Expect the whiz-bang remix next week.
And I don't think you're going to see Move integrated into the next PlayStation in the same way. I think I think they think about it in a different way, that it's a peripheral device. I don't think it's caught on in the same way that Kinect has. I don't think that necessarily is a value judgment either way, defenders. But I hope that the next PlayStation continues the trend of really pushing forward the technical prowess of that platform, because I don't want them to step back, but I fear they may. I fear the next PlayStation may take a page from Nintendo and go for affordability.
Okay.
I would say I would agree with you on some of the Kinect stuff. I don't think that they would ever put the camera into the system, because then that really makes it an awkward situation for entertainment units, and they really keep that stuff under consideration, where to position the console, for example, things like that. But I do think that it would, they would add the voice commands to the system itself, where you can talk to the system and tell it to do things like search, which is something that they've just added, the Bing search, and things like that. So I think that they'll keep the visual part of it separate from the actual audio, which might not work out.
Though, I think so. I mean, they've been successful with Kinect as an outboard peripheral.
Yeah.
So they can change the base unit and conceivably still have existing Kinect sensors hook up to an entirely new system, and then do new Kinect sensors with added functionality later on that would hook up to other systems.
Yeah. And they're building a new system with Kinect in mind, so now they don't have to worry about resource management like they did this Kinect.
Interesting.
Where they had to scale back what it could do because it was only connecting through a USB port, and they didn't want to steal a lot of power from the system itself.
So maybe we're getting around to the idea of the next system, you just plug your existing Kinect right into it.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely going to happen. I don't think that's, I would almost say
there's a proprietary port in the Mac as well, you know.
I think it's going to be built on Windows 8.
Yeah, well,
it's all
going to
be Metro based.
I think that's pretty clear.
I mean, it already is Metro based, really.
You mentioned your wife was excited about Just Dance
on
the Wii, right?
She's hooked.
Is there a consideration of the Kinect in relation to the Wii? I mean, it seems like the Kinect, you see your whole body. You don't have to hold the weird sensor.
I think she'd be just as into the Kinect, without a doubt. I just think the only reason why she's going for the Wii platform over the Xbox One is that she hasn't had the experience with the Xbox One.
What is your position on that?
Well, truth be told, between you and I, because I tend to get so hooked on video games, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, we should probably get the Wii, because if we get an Xbox 360, I'm going to be dead of the world. My career will be over.
Playing an MMO.
Yeah, that's all. I won't even touch those, man. That's Warcrack won't even have it.
World of Warcrack. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. But I definitely see us getting a Wii before I see us getting an Xbox 360.
Okay, so from a consumer electronics standpoint, what would get you excited about like a next generation piece of hardware?
Oh, wow. Actually, it's funny. You know, what would get me excited is actually, frankly, it's the Kinect.
Really?
It's not having to hold it's not having to hold the controller.
Really?
Yeah, without a doubt.
So you're... interesting. So even in the hardcore games that you like, you're looking to not...
I'm looking to not play them. That's really it.
And if you're forced to move around to play them, you'll not play them.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. The way to keep me from absolutely losing myself in games is not to, you know, put the game on a shelf or to put the console away. It's to not buy it in the first place.
So your entire position in the video game market is to make games less desirable for you to play.
Pretty much. That's my position as a consumer, not as a voice actor. As a voice actor, I want them to be as compelling and as fascinating as possible. But as a consumer, I want to I try to avoid them until my resolve finally breaks down. And I'm looking on this page and I'm seeing Diablo 3, and I know that that's where my resolve will break down next.
I'll be right there with you.
Sony's got some interesting stuff ahead. I think that one of the things that will be really telling will be how well they're able to keep down this path of developing the software side of their hardware devices. So that's on the Vita. That's all the location-aware stuff and social networking and giving me a compelling reason to carry this bigger handheld device around with me all the time. And in a home device, you know, I think that they're no dummies. They certainly know the challenges that they've faced in the online space are not just the hardware. It's been live and live the service and perceptions that PSN, despite being free, has not lived up to that. They took baby steps with PS Plus. I think that whatever they do hardware-wise will be really tied into their core strengths, which are Sony Pictures, Sony Music, all that multimedia experience. I mean, the sort of stuff they can bring to bear in that if you're going to put this cool device under your television in the living room, why not have it bring all this Sony stuff in there?
Yeah.
They could arguably on their own turf, I think in their minds at least, be much more of an Apple fighter there. Hmm. Now, whether or not that's true, that remains to be seen. That's a really tough cookie to crack. They need to really, really, really step up the game in the user interface and the user interaction world.
Do you think that the next generation is going to be a race for those companies to sign exclusive agreements for content providers like MLB TV, NHL, NBA, all those packages, those television packages they have, like Netflix and Hulu and all these other channels? Fios now is available on Xbox 360. You think that's the race now?
I think it actually will go the opposite direction. I think what will happen is those...
You think it's a full reset of all
those
that?
Those cats who have signed these exclusives for now will realize that, well, I want to get my content piped through to the customer so I can sell them an extra subscription. Sure. You know, I want to sell you a subscription to Fios. I don't want to sell you a subscription to Xbox. I don't really give a damn what platform you're on. I just want to get you buying Fios from me.
That's fair.
So ultimately, it's the same thing as, you know, as to why platform exclusive games have started to like become the exception as opposed to the norm, because you just want to get in front of as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. That's really that core thing. Hmm. Whew. What a show.
Half-Life 3 this year or no?
No.
It won't come out this year, but they'll announce it this year.
They, yeah. Really?
That's what I think.
Gordon Freeman will meet Duke Nukem, and they'll...
It hasn't been that long.
And
let's
not go crazy. And they'll make a cake. And it won't be a lie. Hey, big thanks to Zach for coming in, dude. Thanks.
Hey, yeah. Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're local, so you're welcome anytime.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Heavyweight in here, ready to punch it out.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I also want to throw out a big thank you to listener Jordan Cohen, who is up there in Redwood, works for Microsoft on the Windows Update team. Much, much appreciated his help going through a couple of Windows Update exceptions I had on my new computer and getting that figured out. And big, big thanks to Doghouse, who've also been really nice in working with me to cross-ship my machine I bought and then didn't work right. Oh, well. It wasn't their fault, actually. Not their fault at all. Probably, I don't think I was supposed to actually use the cup holder. Hey!
Where's the any key?
Old jokes. What else do I have here? Oh, yeah, and a note that there's a... For those of us, since we talked a little bit about Zelda, there's an awesome history of Hyrule that really lays out Zelda's heritage throughout the years. It came out in Japan. It's impossible to find.
Ariel was schooling me on that, by the way.
Surprise.
It is fascinating in that I have no idea what it means. I mean, it's very complicated, but it's all kind of hangs together in a very convoluted way. It's kind of like trying to figure out the movie Primer. Ever seen Primer? Have you never seen Primer?
Oh, the guys again. Who create the
time travel
machine. Yeah.
You know what? I think you had this.
Everybody watch Primer or Primer. I don't know which one it is.
Primer.
It can work both ways because it's a machine, so maybe it's Primer. But fantastic, one of the best movies ever about time travel. I guarantee you.
Jeff Cannata knows because he knows everything about music.
Music.
And, I mean, movies, movies, media, you name it. Anything that's totally rad, he's got it down.
Nice save.
Right. Check it out, totallyradshow.com.
Anything else cool coming up that you want to promote?
We have our sweater episode that'll be coming up, and some big movies. And we announced our Raddies. We awarded the fifth annual Raddies.
I like that.
The awards of the year.
Nice.
A surprising film. You wouldn't guess this film that won the Raddy. And I don't think you would. You might guess the video game that won the Raddy.
You already told us the video game last week.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Last episode.
Yeah. I'm excited. The Shaq News Game of the Year awards are awesome. The top five are excellent.
I can't wait to see.
And reflect our heritage, and that all of them are at least available on PC.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's great.
There you go. Representing the personal computer.
Sorry, Angry Birds. Or actually, Angry Birds is available on PC.
All right. And then you can keep it with Del Rio at Del Rio Music on Twitter. You can follow him on Facebook as well. And of course, as always, thanks to Brooklyn in the booth for us.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brooklyn.
Thank you, Brooklyn.
Another year of Weekend Confirmed. Thanks all for right. people sticking around with us, too.
Yeah. Happy New Year, guys.
All right. So we're going to close out. We're going to go to the tailgate, which will start into the playoffs. We'll get that real quick. Also, congratulations to Jeff again for being our big winner.
Are we doing finishing moves?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we could do finishing moves. We run long. Let's not do finishing moves today.
Oh, all right.
We'll park finishing. Do you have a finishing move?
Well, I just want to say I likely won't be on the next couple of episodes, so people can start celebrating now. But I just want to say I hope you guys have a good few weeks. I will.
We have an awesome,
you guys
awesome
have some
set
amazing
of guests
coming
up.
And
we
I'm really
do.
Sad that I'm going to miss it.
We have Ken Ralston coming up. Which, if you don't know who Ken Ralston is, look him up. He's a game designer. He's working on Kingdoms of Amalur. He's going to be
know,
in
I'm
next
so
week.
I'm so excited for that game.
Ugh. And he's a very creative guy. That'll be a fun set of discussion. And then yes. The week after that, we have Carlos Rodella in. He's a good friend of mine from up in San Francisco. Works with Mevio. Does a gaming video cast with Shu.
Yep.
So he's going to be in. And then, first week in February, the week before the game comes out. Yes. Okay.
The man, the myth.
David Jaffe's going to be here,
so
folks.
So I got to work on getting back for that one.
Yeah, you need to be here because the whole point is we need to have a little discussion.
I know.
He
wants to smack me in the face and head.
So did you have a finishing move then, since you're not going to get one? You can get in a special commemorative one.
Oh, that was kind of my finishing. I was going to mention that on, I don't know if you guys know New Year's Eve, Zav was almost there.
Yeah.
But I was at Snakes and Lattes in Toronto. If you are anywhere near Toronto and you owe it to yourself to go to Snakes and Lattes, an amazing board game cafe. They sell liquor. They sell food. It's very inexpensive. You can pay a small fee and get as many board games as you want. And the best part is they have a very helpful staff that can teach almost any game they have on the shelf, which is hundreds of games. They have a large space with lots of tables to play. Great atmosphere, awesome people, inexpensive, and you can play some of these great designer board games that I keep jabbering on about.
I want to go to there.
Oh, you'd love it. You would love it.
Sounds cool. All right, we'll bring finishing moves back properly next week. But for now, that's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that. I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Spawn those are 3 rings. You know more about me. Anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted. Everything I ever needed. But I'm still struggling. Still competing for your love. Your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Congratulations to NFL tailgate winner Jeff Cannata.
Yay! What Zach, do I win? What do I win, guys?
Zach and Zav actually punched out, so we'll just make this quick. It'll be for fun. You're still gonna have to submit your picks for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, especially since my team got the bye. Yeah, so I don't even get to pick my team this week.
But I'd like to give you the congratulations. Ups, you won 29-16 this season. You are the out of the four of us. You're the only one in the plus side.
Wow.
You know you had a really good season. You were on top of it this year.
I'm as surprised as anybody.
And you now, as what did you win? You win 30 seconds to berate the Cowboys.
Oh, it's the best prize ever. Oh, the win in your in game. And they didn't even show up. Oh, God.
I didn't say I was going to respond. He's looking at me like I'm going to respond. It's 30 minutes.
It makes it less fun when you don't respond.
They showed up in the second half for about 10 minutes.
Oh, it gave me so much joy that they really shouldn't have even had a shot of making the playoffs.
Why should they not have had a shot?
Because they played like crap all year. In any game that mattered, they didn't show up. And Romo, you know,
had the best season of his career.
Best season of his career for, you know.
Thrown away.
Yeah. Must hurt. I just love seeing, that team not make the playoffs because everybody loves the Cowboys, the freaking vaunted Cowboys.
I think
same thing every year. They do not play well in December.
I think as Andrew Siciliano pointed out, they've won one playoff game in 14 years. They're not that vaunted. They've had a lot of hype.
Every year, people are picking them at the beginning of the season.
I know.
They're going to win the NFC. No.
Trail of tears.
That's right. Meanwhile, my Niners get the bye. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
All right, that's your 30 seconds. You got plenty out of that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. All right, so... by the way, last week, I did actually do decent the last two weekends, but it still wasn't good enough to get back. Brooklyn and I both round up at 19 and 26, and Dave was one better than us at 20 and 25. So here we go for the first round of the playoffs in the wild card games. We have Cincinnati getting 3 at Houston. Remember, Houston's on there, still on their backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Rookie.
I'm taking, this is a tough one. This is a tough one. I'm taking Houston.
I'm taking Houston as well. Emotional at home, first time in the playoffs, and they get to host a game. Hell yeah, they're going to win. Go Texans. What do you guys think in the booth? Cincinnati for Dave, and Brooklyn is with us on Houston. So, there's a chance for Dave to go ahead. Then the other matchup that takes place on Saturday, we have Detroit getting 10.5 points.
Wow.
Going into the Superdome to face the New Orleans Saints. You want to take a guess on this one?
Well, I definitely think the Saints are going to win.
I think the Saints are going to win too.
10.5? I'm not willing to do that. I'm taking Detroit with the points.
I'm taking the Saints to just roll all over the Lions. Oof. And as the Lions fold up and run away, but just because they've had a hard season, they got some injuries as well, and yeah. I don't think they're in that class. I think New Orleans is the best balanced team in the NFL right now. Best balanced, not necessarily, maybe, but the best balanced team.
So I got to see what happens if they meet the Niners defense.
I got the Saints, and in the booth, Brooklyn has. She's taking the points and the Lions, and Dave is taking the Saints. So we got a split right there, and then on Sunday, we have those New York Giants. Mm-hmm. They are at home, and they are giving up 3 points to the visiting Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Giants at home. I think Eli's playing well, and the defense is playing well.
Meadowlands, open air in January. Falcons, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
That's a Giants win right there, and by more than 3. So I'm going to take the Giants as well. And in the booth, we have Dave with... He's going with the Falcons and also the Falcons. So it's a split, talent and booth. I think the Giants. Oh, she said Giants.
No.
Oh, okay. So she's got the Giants.
Talent and Del Rio.
And then wrapping it all up.
This is the game of the week. This is your game of the week. Tebow time.
All right. So the Tebow, I'm ignoring some flack about Tony Romo from the booth.
Roethlisberger. Still not doing well.
Dude, that was a horrible thing that happened to his ankle. I mean, it's not taking a long time to recover from. So how on earth Pittsburgh has to give 8.5?
That's why I'm taking Denver.
I have no idea. But
they stay in it. They're staying in it. It's a close game. This is a close game.
Denver at home.
Yeah.
And they get 8.5? Come on.
Tebow time.
Come on. The Tebow magic. The magic's at least going to keep them close, right? You got to go Denver.
Yeah.
Denver. What do you guys think? Denver. Everybody's going Denver.
Oh, that's a bad sign.
Everybody's going.
Yeah, it's going to be a close game. Their defense will keep them in it. And Pittsburgh's offense is so beat up. So, yeah.
On the upside, I did win 2 of 3 championships in fantasy. So
I played
6 fantasy leagues.
Not our league, unfortunately.
And I won 2 of them.
You and I both got our butts
And I was
kicked.
In the championship for 3 of them. So I was pretty happy.
That's great.
Yeah. Including beating the one that has like some of the... Tiburon and some of the PR folks around on it with my team, the Embargo Breakers.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a very satisfying win. All right, folks, I hope you have a great time watching football or whatever you're up to this weekend, and we'll be back next week. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.